Good evening, and welcome to tonight's telephone town hall with Congressman Sam Farr. We're excited about this new technology that allows the congressman to chat with hundreds of his Central Coast neighbors while sitting in his office in Washington, D.C. In a few moments, we'll be joined by Congressman Farr. But first, I'd like to explain a little bit about what we're going to be doing tonight. At any time during the call, if you would like to ask the congressman a question, press star 3 on your telephone. You will continue to hear the conference call until one of our town hall assistants can join you and take your question. Please be ready to give them your name, your city, and of course your question. This will allow us to keep the discussion flowing and reduce repeated topics. And if we can't get to your question during the call, you will also be able to leave a message for the congressman, similar to a voicemail. It's a little extra incentive to stay on for the entire call. And finally, a recording of the teleconference will be available on our website tomorrow morning. So feel free to visit www.farr.house.gov and take a listen. Now, I would like to introduce Congressman Sam Farr. He has served the Central Coast for more than 30 years as a county supervisor, then state representative, and now congressman. And again, if you have a question at any time, press star 3 and an assistant will be with you shortly. And now joining us, Congressman Sam Farr. Congressman?
Hello, everyone. This is Sam Farr, and I'm sitting here in my office in Washington, D.C. It's kind of a cold night back here, so I hope that good weather that I left today in California is still with you. I'm really excited about this technology where it allows me to have essentially a town hall meeting using telecommunications to do it, and it's live, and you can ask those questions, so I look forward to them. I'll give you a little bit of what's going on here in Washington before we begin the questions. We have, you know, Congress gets criticized, but we have actually been accomplishing quite a few things. We've just recently created the economic stimulus package. These are tax rebates and mortgage assistance that's going to go out to people. And I want to just remind everyone that you've got to file the form in order to get the rebate. We've increased for the first time the minimum wage in over 10 years. It increases to $7.25. That's still below the California level, but it's certainly a stimulus for wage earners around the country. We've passed the largest college aid expansion program since the GI Bill, which was enacted in 1944. It invests about $18 billion over the next 5 years in college financial aid. We've enacted the largest veterans health care funding increase. This is really historic because we've got about 27,000 veterans living in the Central Coast area. This is going to cover their health care costs and benefits totaling over $12 billion. I'm really proud to be very involved in that. We've passed the energy bill that raises the fuel standards on automobiles, and we're very excited about that. It's going to increase it to 35 miles per gallon. And obviously, we'll give a stimulus to other alternative fuels and to the incentives that California is coming up with to fight global warming. We've passed the 9/11 Commission recommendations. Those were the recommendations that the administration opposed that came out after the 9/11 terrorist attack. And we're very proud to have put all those recommendations into law. We've passed a pay-as-you-go budget discipline. This is the strongest discipline on Congress to not enact new programs without paying for them. And we do that by cutting other programs. If the president was willing, we could also find some other adjustments. But we are now cutting in order to give you these $12 billion in new funding for veterans and others. And we've passed the strongest ethics and lobbying reform in many, many years. So Congress is getting a lot of things done. We've had a new majority, a new speaker, and Nancy Pelosi from San Francisco, and certainly she's taking us in a new direction. I'm very proud to be part of that. I'm very excited about some of the legislation that I've been personally involved with, and we'll get to that in just a moment. But I want to remind you to make sure that you get into the queue for asking questions. Make sure you follow the instructions on how to do that.
All right. Thank you, Congressman. And that would be to press star 3 if you have a question. Now we're going to go ahead and move on to that question and answer session. Remember, if you'd like to ask Congressman a question, it's star 3. and you will be attended to by a town hall assistant. I'll go ahead and start. Congressman, you just mentioned a piece of legislation that you've been working on. I understand it will be voted on by the full House of Representatives tomorrow. The Reconstruction and Stabilization Civilian Management Act is its name. Can you tell us a little bit about the bill and what you hope it will accomplish?
Well, I've been very interested. You know, in my young college after college years, I was in the Peace Corps in South America. And since getting elected to Congress, I've been visiting troops in different areas and different countries and really came to the conclusion that we need to call upon those who really have cross-cultural and overseas experience. We have thousands of them who have served in the State Department, in the USAID, in the military, who really know the languages and cultures of country, but we have no way of calling upon this talent bank as we would do in an emergency response here in the United States by calling up the state emergency responders or federal emergency responders. Nothing like that on the international level for essentially failed states. So this bill that we're going to vote on tomorrow, and it's got strong bipartisan support, will strengthen and restore our civilian nation-building capacity. We've seen in Iraq that the military isn't the right tool to essentially rebuild the failed state, and this will give the State Department, their foreign service officers, really the ability to call them up within 24 hours and put them overseas. It also sets up a standby response corps of 2,000 people ready to go. And more importantly, and I think really excitingly for us local people with skills, is it has a civilian reserve corps made up of local folks like chiefs of police, people in the judiciary, be judges or defense or prosecutors, to help these states, these countries bring up their rule of law enforcement. So I'm very excited. This is a bill that the State Department badly wants, the Defense Department badly wants, and I think the American people have been calling on for a long time.
Great. Thank you, Congressman. Looks like we've got quite a few questions in the queue right now, so we'll go ahead and go live to those questions. Bill Jones from Salinas had a question about family medicine,
yes.
Primary care. Go ahead, Bill.
Hi.
Hi, Bill.
How you doing? I have a question about health care.
Mm-hmm.
Doc, I don't know if you're familiar with Dr. Douglas Cameron. He was the Assistant Surgeon General. And my wife is a family practitioner.
Mm-hmm.
She's a family practice doctor. Now, with the reform of, everyone's talking about the reform of health care and getting everyone covered, there is a crisis in this country with family practice, primary care, and internal medicine. And the problem is the multiple payer, the way the insurance is set up. First of all, the doctors are having a hard time getting paid for
mm-hmm.
services. And
I'm very familiar with that.
Okay, good. I go into my wife's office and try to go online with insurance companies, and they deny services. Now, this leads to a bigger problem. The bigger crisis is that...
Okay, caller, if we can please get to the question. Sorry to interrupt. Go ahead and get to the question, please.
Here's the question. Young doctors are not going into primary care. They're specializing. We're going to be in a very big shortage of family practice doctors, which is going to increase the cost of health care.
Do you want to know what we're going to do about it? I'll respond to your question.
Well, I want to know if you're aware of it. I want to know
very much aware, and I can tell you what we're and I really, Bill, thanks for your question. First of all, on incentives to get people into primary care and into those areas that we need out in the community, sort of the non-lucrative areas of medicine. I'm working with Jim McDermott, who's a doctor in Congress from Seattle, on the concept that we ought to pick up the cost of medical school education so that the doctors don't have to come out, students and new docs don't have to come out with a huge $140,000, $200,000 loan that they have to pay back as they're going into practice, as they're having to rent real estate, as they're having to start it all up. Well, that would be one way of, and then by covering that, we could also get them to go into the areas that are underserved and underpaid. Locally, I'm working on trying to bring up the reimbursement rate for Medicare. This is the other end of the spectrum from infants, but it certainly our senior population is part of that family care. And that senior population in our counties in Santa Cruz, Monterey, and San Benito gets a lower reimbursement than the Santa Clara and San Francisco area counties, as well as Los Angeles. We're well on top of it. I have the language in the bill that passed out of the House. We're trying to get the Senate to adopt that, and if we get that adopted, it will correct the problem for our Central Coast, and their reimbursement rate is very, very important to our doctors. And I think we need to also pass a comprehensive health care bill for the entire nation. We can't just do this in the piecemeal fashion that we've done it, and that's going to take an overhaul and presidential leadership to get it done, and I'm very supportive because I think the next president of the United States will take that on. People want it done, and we've got to deliver on it.
Great. Thank you, Congressman. Once again, I'm going to ask folks to go ahead and press star 3 if they'd like to ask a question of the congressman. We've got quite a few participants, but we'd like a few more questions. We have Maria Ortiz on the line from Salinas. And I understand Maria has a question about gangs or the gang issues in Salinas. Go ahead, Maria.
Yes, I have a question. It seems to me that when I was growing up, and I'm in my 60s, I don't recall having youth running around wild, shooting up the place. It seems like I saw a decline it seems like all this started up just about the time the draft was no longer there. I'm wondering, if we had a draft out there and we had youth that were actually being kept busy, maybe they wouldn't have time to get in all this trouble, because I feel like a hostage. I just got through listening to the news, 4 more shootings. And I'm one of those people that call. Every time I hear the shots, I'm calling. And
well, thank you for doing that.
Yes, and I feel so stupid. I feel like, am I the only one? You know, and I mean, frankly, I just fear for everybody's lives anymore. We don't even go out anymore. As soon as it's dark, we're in our house. I feel like we're in the war zone. I mean,
all right, Congressman, can you go ahead and take the question about what's being done in the Salinas area regarding the gang problem? Thanks a lot, Maria, for the call.
Maria, thank you very much. I'm very much aware of it. I've been getting funding for Monterey County Sheriffs and the Salinas Police Department and working with the probation department. The answer to your question is a couplefold. First of all, there's no need to reinstate the draft because we have an all-voluntary military and they're filling their quotas just by people volunteering. And they frankly find that a motivational serviceman and woman is a much better soldier, airman, and marine than sailor than just drafts, and so there's no pressure from the Department of Defense to want to reinstate the draft, and there's certainly no political support in Congress to do it. What I think is you're seeing failing is, one, a lack of parenting. People, we don't teach parenting, and you know, you just sort of, you if you were raised by parents, you have some good parents, you have some knowledge just from growing up in it. If you had dysfunctional parents, you don't have any knowledge, and now all of a sudden you're a parent. And I think what we're trying to do in Salinas is reach out, and we're going to spend it to South County as well, as money will allow, is to take those kids that are high risk in high school and middle school who are showing that they're starting to have problems, falling behind in school, maybe even dropping out, maybe getting into problems, and putting them into the Silver Star program, which is really a phenomenal program that Salinas runs that gives them education and counseling and has essentially a gang prevention so that the supply line of going into the gangs is cut off. In the meantime, we're bringing this team approach to law enforcement so that they can jump on the problem as quickly as possible. But your statement is absolutely the bottom line, is that you've got to fight this block by block, neighborhood by neighborhood. You've got to get a participatory constituency of parents and concerned citizens who will say no more on this block, and just clean it up. The city's ready to work with you, and I'm ready to work with you, and I'm proud of you of reporting those things, and you just have to keep encouraging your neighbors to do the same.
Great. Thank you, Congressman. Again, callers, star 3 to ask a question. I'm now going to go to Santa Cruz to Joseph. Is it Joseph Light? Are you there, Joseph?
Yes, sir. That's it.
I understand you have a question for the congressman regarding the telecom immunity.
A couple of things, about this Federal Intelligence Surveillance Act.
The FISA Act.
Yeah, the FISA Act. I'm not too keen on giving the president any latitude of any sort, and I don't see why the telecom companies should be getting immunity. And on the other hand, about the spraying that's supposed to be going on in June here, I have personal direct experience of having been sprayed by that toxic junk, and it was pretty nasty. I didn't go to a doctor because I just generally don't like doctors and paying a high fee to have to be waiting too long. So I just recuperated on my own, but it was a few days of being pretty sick. So if you could, whatever you could do to...
Okay. Let me answer both your questions.
Sure, sure. I heard you on your...
The VISA and the LBAM spraying. First of all, FISA, as you mentioned, is this wiretapping bill for foreign surveillance. The House has blocked the Senate bill. The Senate bill is a bad bill because it gave immunity to the telecom companies who we think probably broke the law, and we don't think they ought to be given immunity for that, broke the existing law. So we're not willing to pass the next law by just giving them total immunity. There's ways we can work out limitations on if there is wrongdoing and harm done that they would, you know, fines could be limited and things like that. But to just give them a blanket bill is just wrong, and I don't think the votes in the House are to pass that bill. In the meantime, I just want to assure everybody that it doesn't affect our ability to do what is safe and necessary in foreign surveillance. The existing law covers that at least until the latter part of the year, and by then I think we'll work out this compromise. So I'm not going to support immunity, and I want the White House to disclose what the telecom's involvement has been in this wiretapping. And I, as I said, I don't support the Senate bill. LBAM. First of all, this light brown apple moth is what the LBAM stands for. It is a big problem. It's a huge problem for everybody. The spraying is a problem. The moth itself is a problem. As you know, they're trying to spray a pheromone, which is a perfume that drives the moth nuts so that they can't mate. But this moth, if it got loose, you've heard most about what it could do to agriculture crops. But what is little exposed is how bad it could do to just our native vegetation of our redwood trees, oak trees, and so on. I think the best way to trap them is on the ground where the moths are, and they can do these by these pheromone traps, which is what we use for insect collection all the time. And it's just trying to get those things distributed, which I think if we put our efforts into doing that, we could have a much more effective distribution tech. I hope that spraying isn't necessary. There's, you know, John Laird and has had legislation in Sacramento where it's the state office of agriculture that is carrying out this program. And that would require a lot more health care tests. And I've asked the Surgeon General to meet with me and the Secretary of Agriculture to make sure that all the health risks are adequately addressed. I don't think they have been to the satisfaction of people in the district. So I certainly don't want us to be doing something that isn't safe, and aerial spraying has to be a last resort, especially spraying over populated areas. So I think there's alternatives to be considered, and we're going to work on that. And I thank you for your question.
Thank you, Congressman. Also, remember, *3 to ask a question, and if your question doesn't get asked during the telephone town hall, you will be able to stay on the line and leave a message, and we will be able to get back to you. We have a question from Salinas, from Margarita. Margarita, are you there? You have a question for
Yes.
Congressman Farr on tax? On taxes?
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
Go ahead, Margarita.
Yeah, my question is, you have to fill out a form so we can get our taxes. How do we go by getting that?
The form is essentially you have to file because that's how we know that you qualify for the rebate. And that filing form can be obtained, I'm sure, at the post office. It can be obtained at our office or anybody who hands out tax forms, the IRS office in Salinas. We will make sure that we get into the papers and everything exactly where you can pick those forms up. But if you want to call my office in the morning, that number is 424-2229, 424-2229 in Salinas, and you can pick up the forms there, I believe. If ask Nancy DeSerpa. She's my staff member who's handling my tax issues.
Thank you, Congressman. Remember, *3 to ask a question. We've got Roger Powers on the line from Salinas. Roger, are you... Are you there?
Hello?
I understand. It looks like we've lost Roger Powers. Hopefully Roger can call back and we can get him on the line with Congressman Sam Farr. Congressman, I've got a question for you in the meantime. Do you have any update for us on the farm bill and how that might affect the Central Coast?
Well, it's very interesting. Just last Friday, the Census Bureau released the farm earnings in the United States, which off the farms amounted to $51 billion. The top farming earning counties in the United States were all in California. And the number one county of the top five was Monterey, followed by Kern, Tulare, Fresno, and Ventura. So I've always been saying that our greatest economic engine is our out-of-doors and how we are able to farm it using best practices methods, including organic farming and so on. And the sales from that 85 different crops that are grown in our area are all over the world. That one of the reasons you get into this LBAM issue is, too, because you can't ship the crops out if that light brown apple moth is going to be on any of them. So the farm bill, which has traditionally just addressed the commodity crops, which are corn, wheat, beans, rice, and cotton, has gotten all the federal attention all these years. And if you think about it, it's because those crops can be stored. And so they were trying to make sure that the buyers, the storers, wouldn't manipulate the market and put the farmers out of business. So that's why the federal government originally got involved. But it's grown to much more complicated issues than that now. What is lacking and has been lacking is enough attention paid to specialty crops, the kind of crops we grow in California. They essentially don't get no federal attention whatsoever. We're not asking for bailouts like the commodity crops. We're asking for ability to market these crops more effectively and to essentially do research. And we have in that farm bill, for specialty crops, we have the California perspective, which is more specialty crop block grants, more research, more fruits and vegetables in the students' lunch program and school breakfast program, for better pest detection and surveillance, like with the E. coli and now the LBAM, with helping seniors farmers markets get better established around the country, and to also make sure that the produce that we're shipping and harvesting is safe and healthy. So I'm very excited by the potential Monterey County because we have one of the only places in the United States that is actually training farm workers to be more sophisticated in even being growers or being upgrading their skills in a program called ALBA, which is an agriculture and land-based training association. It's teaching people how to grow organic. It's a wonderful program. It's being recognized around the country, and it's in the Chular area. We also have a federal research station in Salinas, which is very rare to have in an area, and we have a very good one that is getting research money on the on organic farming and on certainly on the wiping out the methyl bromide and other kinds of toxics. And we are marketing our specialty crops so that we can get them into schools and get children to have a better program. So we're trying to protect those specialty crop interests. And the question of the farm bill is the Senate is essentially the old school. The House is the new school. And the Senate is, particularly the Southern senators, have been trying to protect those bailout programs at the expense of the specialty crop programs. We've held off from allowing them to do that. But we won't get a farm bill until we get a compromise. I think the compromise is close.
Thank you, Congressman. We had lost Roger Powers from Salinas. However, his question was regarding the mortgage crisis. Congressman, as you know, many families on the Central Coast are very concerned about what's going on with respect to housing. Perhaps you can let folks know what Washington is thinking on what can be done to help those folks who are in a crunch.
Well, Roger, thank you for the question. We're getting about 10 to 15 calls a day in our offices in Santa Cruz and Salinas, and I'm very much aware of it. I have actually friends that are went through foreclosure. There, it's all this foreclosure talk is thrown into that one word, but there are actually five categories within the foreclosure columns, and those five categories are tax liens, which have been traditional. If people don't pay their property taxes, then they can foreclose on. The traditional foreclosure, we have about 1,700 of the tax liens in Monterey County. We have about 4,200 houses that are in this in these foreclosure categories. About 500 of them are in the traditional foreclosure. Most of them are in the pre-foreclosure. They've gotten a notice that if the payments aren't made or the loan restructured, they will go move on to foreclosure. We have 11 houses that the owners have just put up for sale. They're handling it themselves, and we've had 300 homes go into bankruptcy. We had about 1,500 foreclosures last year in Monterey County, and they expect double that, over 3,000 this year. So what we're going to try to do, because this is one where you really need the homeowner to be informed, is that we're going to have, first of all, in Santa Cruz County on March 11th, the Watsonville Law Center is holding a housing clinic. I don't know the location, but I have a number, and you can call my office and get the location on that. And then in Monterey County, the State Department of Real Estate is going to be holding a April 10th housing foreclosure workshop, and this county board of supervisors is sponsoring that. I know Lou Calgagno and Fernando Armenta are very keen on that. Again, you can call my office as to the location. We're trying to help people. We have a counseling program in Monterey County called MOCA, and that is the only HUD-approved counseling agency in the county, and that it essentially is pre-loan and post problems like foreclosure. We have housing authorities, and we have all kinds of different other professional services, including a fraud unit working out of Oakland that was going to help us. So we're trying to get on top of it. It's a serious problem with Monterey County. And lastly, I'd just like to add that I'm really keen on trying to get more middle-class worker housing built and sold and rented in the Monterey County. And I've made that effort in Fort Ord, where we'll have, when those housings are built out, about 500 or 600 brand new homes. They'll be in the million-dollar value, but they'll be sold to people low income. And I'm getting the Fort Ord Reuse Authority to describe to us in detail how one can apply for one of those houses and qualify. And that should be out within a month or so. And I'll be making that public as well. So at all angles, we're trying to help people with this really serious problem that we're having with foreclosures.
Once again, callers, if you can press *3 to ask your question, Mr. Farr would love to take as many as we possibly can. We have quite a few callers who are calling on education, a perennial favorite. And we have, I believe, Doug Chandler from Marina, who should be on the line. Doug, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Go ahead and ask your question.
Yes, I wanted to ask you about the No Child Left Behind Act. I work for a school that's in PI-4 status, and my observation is that most of the problems are socioeconomic as far as who's selected for PI status and who does and doesn't stack up to what it is that is being required. Do you anticipate working to either get rid of or substantially change the No Child Left Behind Act, and if so, how?
Well, thank you for asking the question. It's very. I've served all the years I was in the California Legislature on the Education Committee, and education in America is very difficult to understand because it is one of the. It's essential for the nation. But it is one of those essential programs that is totally controlled by the states and local government. In California, we have 1,200 different government school districts elected, some of them unified, some of them just primary or high school. And this federal law was to try to get those schools that receive federal funds for categorical programs. Again, the federal government doesn't have any high school graduation requirements or teacher credentialing; those are all done by the states. And we don't even have a national uniform testing standard. So each state develops their own, and that's the So you have 50 different evaluation systems that are in this No Child Left Behind. And in California, because it's a pretty sophisticated state that's been doing evaluation for a long time with the largest multicultural student body in the United States, maybe in the world, it's difficult to get everybody on the same page, particularly when you're having schools like Beverly Hills and the really high-income areas compared with the Chulars and so on. And so the No Child Left Behind, it was kind of a carrot and stick. The problem is the carrot was that we were going to give you more money, and we didn't. That's the fault of the administration. They haven't asked for Congress to appropriate the money, and when we have, they haven't supported the additional amount. So the schools are overburdened having to carry out the law with no money to do it. The reauthorization of the bill is right now moving nowhere, just because of the exact same thing you said, and then in spades, depending on who you're talking to. And, you know, Senator Kennedy in the Senate and Congressman George Miller from the Martinez area in California were the co-sponsors of that bill, and along with Republicans. The president wants this bill more than anything because he thinks it's his legacy project. But without incredible reforms in evaluation techniques that just don't put it all on the test, and I think that's just wrong. I didn't test well as a young child, and I hated tests. And I think that that's not the way to try to put the burden on the child at that vulnerable age, that you've just got to excel in testing, and then the burden on the teacher that if you don't have the whole class excelling on testing, you're not going to be able to continue teaching. So it's a very emotional program that is not solving its goals, and I don't think it'll get reauthorized this year. I look for a new president and a new session of Congress and to really rewrite that bill. But in the meantime, we have helped college education and increase the access to college, affordability of college, and we've certainly, where the federal government steps in the early education, Head Start, we've put in some more money for special ed, not enough, but we're putting more than we've put in the past, and these are the kinds of categorical programs where the Congress and the federal government is going to increase funding. But the provisions of No Child Left Behind are left behind in the committee at this point. There's not the votes to bring the bill out.
Thank you, Congressman. Again, callers can dial *3 to ask a question, and if we run out of time, you will be given instructions at the tail end of the call on how to leave a message for us. We have a call now from Jordan from Salinas. Jordan, are you there? I understand you have a question
for
Congressman Farr regarding green building.
Right. Thank you for
Go
taking
ahead.
My call.
Yeah.
I'm a general contractor and really interested in seeing green building move forward. And I was just wondering if, Congressman Farr, you think it's possible that green building, that market change could really happen through the use of incentives rather than regulations on green building?
Yeah, I would hope so. That's normally the way new innovation comes online. And for example, the tax credit for wind and solar and things like that, we're not forcing people to do that, but giving them a tax incentive to build the infrastructure. And that's catching on, as you know, as a builder, a contractor. California, your license comes from the state of California. The building code's enforced by local government, cities, and counties. And the incentive seems to be more of a California-based incentive as part of their whole picture to come up with a menu of all kinds of, from car efficiencies, clean air, to water quality, to building materials. And I think you'll see the incentive is more California-based than the federal government. Ours will be more grants and in research, trying to bring on board the latest and appropriate kinds of technology, some tax incentives, and sort of raising the standards for those who are the biggest polluters. And I think that that's where most of the incentives have come from. But I think it's going to catch on because the consumer wants these things, and manufacturers were going to make it easier so that the products that you have to choose from will be affordable, yeah, because there'll be a lot of them. So I think that there's no quick, easy answer for you as a small businessman, but I would work with the county and the state and we will back them up in what I hope I'm backing up California, because I think it's going to lead the nation in all these issues way before the federal government catches up with them.
Thank you, Congressman. Once again, caller, star 3 to ask a question. I understand we have a question from Richard Lewis, or Jordan, I'm sorry, we had you still on. Sorry for the technical difficulty. Jordan Lewis, or Richard Lewis, rather, I believe we have on the line now to ask a question about what's going on in the district. Richard, are you there?
Sure am.
All right, go ahead.
Hi, Sam. I just was wondering whether in your district, whether you're taking any active role in that global or national Youth Service Day coming up in April, and if not, whether you'd kind of take a look at what you might do to, you know, move some of the people in your district toward celebrating that in different ways. I, as you know, trying to put together teams that honor Dr. King and Cesar Chavez and hold, like, a community conversation along that line. And just, you know, if you comment that $83-plus million federally that's coming into California, how you see those stakeholders, how they're utilizing that federal agency to move forward, giving voice and empowerment. And just an open-ended question. I know you're in that loop.
Well, thank you very much, Richard, for the question. You know, I'm a returned Peace Corps volunteer, and I really believe that we ought to have, provide the ability for everybody to serve whatever way they want to, but that it ought to be there. And interesting enough, we're going to have a study on just how you do that without just creating one big bureaucracy to have national service in America. We have military service, which is all volunteer. We have Peace Corps service. We have senior services. We have the job corps and other kinds of things. But to make them all interactive is really important. So tomorrow on the floor, we're going to be amending a bill to put in the study on how we can get all this done. In the meantime, we're supporting those programs. We've got several in Monterey County and in the area. There's City Build. There's Youth Build. There's Youth Serve. And I might add that this is the week that is National Peace Corps Week. So those of us who are in the Peace Corps in Congress are going to be putting a lot of attention on how we market these ideas of getting people involved in community activities. I'm very proud to represent California State University at Monterey Bay, because they were one of the first universities, probably the first in the nation, to require as a requirement for graduation that you had to do in-service learning, which is essentially, as a student, you got to take what you're learning and put it to use in the community. And that's a requirement in order to graduate. And a lot of these people end up making it their major, and some have taken their major and turned them into businesses. So it's a very, I think, along the lines that you're talking about is really getting this discussion about how does one not ask the country just to help them, but how they can help the country, like the woman who called early on, Maria Ortiz, who called up from Salinas, talking about how she just needed her neighbors to get involved, calling about crime happening in the neighborhood. It's all of our responsibility. The country is the strength of the individuals coming together and building a strong nation, and I think service to our nation is one of the great ways to do that. So thank you for your question.
Thank you, Congressman. We have another question, but before I do that, I'll announce once again, star 3 will get you in the queue to ask Congressman Sam Farr a question. We have Nanette Saucier. Is that how you pronounce your name,
yes.
Nanette?
Yes.
Great. We have Nanette interested in health care. Go ahead and ask the Congressman a question.
Yes. Well, you mentioned universal health care before, and it may have to be done at the presidential level or something like that, and you know, maybe not piecemeal, and I would thoroughly agree. However, I was wondering if there isn't a way to somehow get help for our public servants who, you know, such as our teachers who may retire and not be able to even afford to pay the premiums on their health care.
Well, thank you for asking. I'll try to make my answers a little shorter so we can pick up more questions. People who are working in the public field, public service, including teachers, do have their teachers, state teachers retirement program has a health care group plan, just like California state employees and municipal employees and federal employees. And one of the things we're trying to do is to broaden all of the private insurance to cover, like they do, the mental health coverage. So we're going to have a vote this week on the parity, on creating equality in health care. But I think the bottom line is that we have to get everybody in the United States under some insurance one way or another. And Medicare is the great model. I mean, everybody over 65 is covered. And if we had that for the rest of our society, we'd be okay. We just can't afford to do it without some major reforms, because the middleman in this healthcare cost is the insurance companies. And you can't have the insurance company stand between the doctor and the patient. It's too expensive, and it's not the best way to deliver care. So reforms are on their way, but I think, again, we're going to try to work to make sure that everybody in our counties are covered, and it's going to start at the local level, and Monterey County and Santa Cruz County are trying to get comprehensive coverage.
Thank you, Congressman. We're going to go ahead and go straight to another question from Maggie Torres in Salinas, California. I understand, Maggie, you have a question about gas prices. I'm sure it is on a lot of people's minds. Go ahead and ask the Congressman your question if you're there.
Yes. First of all, I want to say thank you, Mr. Farr, for doing such a great job. And my question is, every day, especially in the mornings when I listen to news, I keep hearing about gas prices going up, and it's costing us more money in food and products. And what my question to you is, what are we as the government or yourself doing about keeping the prices down, and is there an alternative to the oil for our fuel?
Very good question, Maggie. When this administration took office, gasoline cost $1.44. I bought gasoline this weekend at one of those discount stations, and it was $3.54 a gallon. That's 140% increase since 2001. That's the highest percentage of increase in the entire United States. So it is hurting our pockets. I might add that all gasoline, as I look down this list, as of last week in the United States, is selling for over $3 a gallon. Some of them, you know, low $3, and some of them up above 50 cents, like in California, $3.50. The price of oil has gone off per barrel is over $100. What we need to do is tax the windfall profits that these oil companies are making, and use that huge amount of revenue to put it into alternatives and to bring down the cost. And I think if this is sort of a race between these alternative technologies and the price of oil, as long as oil is that high, it gives a lot of incentives for people to come up with biofuels and other kind of electric cars and things like that. And in the end, it's going to be you, the consumer. But it's affecting our work, too, because, as I stated earlier, all the produce from Salinas Valley has to be shipped all over the world, and that is a price. They tell me the price of gasoline is more costly than the vegetables in the back of the truck. So it's hurting business people, and it's hurting consumers, and certainly hurting people on low and limited incomes. And I'm very much concerned about that, but the oil business is still a private enterprise, and there's no way we could get in and subsidize those prices at the tank without, I think what we do is find alternatives that will just be more acceptable and adoptable by consumers than having to buy a gallon of gas.
Thank you, Congressman. Once again, *3 to ask your question. We're coming to getting near the end of the questions here, but you'll be able to have the opportunity to leave a voicemail for the Congressman at the end of the call, so do stay on. We're going to go ahead and go live now to Carlisle Sachem in Carmel Valley. Carlisle, are you there?
Yes, hi.
Go ahead and go with your question.
Yeah, hello, Congressman. This is a great night. You know, I'm glad you're doing this. I want to ask you about the U.S. commitment to the Global Child Survival Act, which will help 10 million children. Can you co-sponsor the Global Child Survival Act? And number two, will you actively support its passage through the committees in the full House and Senate? And it's passed through the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, but not the House Committee on Foreign Affairs.
Well, thank you for calling, and I admire the work that you and your brother have been doing and your whole family since I've known him as a child, and I commend
you. Yeah, it's
you
my on. Husband, my husband, uh-huh.
And you know, as far as that act, the Senate has passed it. The House, you know, we had a tragic death of Congressman Lantos, who was chair of the committee. And Howard Berman has now since taken over the committee since Mr. Lantos passed away. And he's only been in chair about a week and a half. So I would expect that a lot of that legislation that got backlogged will pass. And I didn't know that I wasn't a co-sponsor of it, but certainly I can become a co-sponsor. And, yes, I'm not on that subcommittee or the full committee on foreign relations, but I will work to see that bill gets to the floor and gets passed.
Thank you, Congressman. Now we have a question from Bill Crothers in Salinas, California, about the LBAM spray. You there, Bill?
I am.
Go ahead and go forth with your question.
Congressman Farr, I am delighted to see that you are supporting the efforts of the Agricultural Department to control the light brown apple moth. My perspective on it is as a biochemist and a toxicologist who can look at the material safety data sheet and recognize a very friendly chemical. It looks a lot like ivory soap, only much, much, much less dilute and made into an acetate ester. And you can assure these people that if they've ever smelled good old ivory soap or Chanel No. 5 or some of the other long chain esters, they've been exposed to something far more toxic than the active principles of Checkmate OLRF. And it's also, we are looking at an incredible dilute suspensions here. This is one of the lowest concentrations that you could ever ask for. So,
well, Billy, you know, I think
I appreciate your support.
Yeah. Well, I first of all, thank you for being a biochemist.
If any of these people would like to, a little more information from a chemist, why and what an incredible we've materials like this have been around.
I don't think we can debate. We don't have time for that. But the pheromone, I don't think people are complaining about that. Well, there is the ingredient that carries the pheromone in the spray, and I don't think, one, the government did a very good job of telling people why this was so essential to use this spray methodology. Two, what the damage of the light brown apple moth would be to native vegetation and to their own their own yards and their own trees. And three, remember when there was a lawsuit filed, the company who was making the ingredient was indicating that was proprietary information and they didn't have to release it. The Department of Agriculture, State Department, did finally under pressure. But see, it raises all the suspicion and people don't like to be sprayed. I think if we were spraying water, people wouldn't like it. But I think they have a right to know. Certainly that's my job in public life, is to give the people access to information, and they have a right to know. And the government hasn't done a very good job. Maybe for you as a scientist, you can read it and understand it. But for the consumer on the street, they're very, very concerned, and yet many not convinced that this is as safe as you say, and I think that the government has a responsibility to assure them that it is and use all the resources that we have available to do that.
Thank you, Congressman. We've got time for a couple more questions. The next one will be coming from Barbara Mitchell, Carmel, California. Are you there, Barbara?
Yeah, I'm there. Hi,
Sam. Go ahead and go with your question.
Hi, Barbara.
Hi, Sam. Usually I'm bugging you about mental health issues, but I'm concerned that Governor Schwarzenegger has decided it would be a good idea to save money in California by cutting out all adult dental under Medi-Cal. And I think this will have disastrous effects for all low-income people who are on Medi-Cal, and it loses both the state contribution, of course, the matching federal contribution. I'm wondering if you can do anything to try and stop this from happening.
Well, the state, as you know, Barb, first of all, I want to thank you for what you do, your work with Interim Inc., and you're the strongest voice I've ever heard or seen for mental health in the nation, and I think you're a national hero. So thank you for calling on it. The good news, just on mental health, and I don't know if you heard it earlier, but we're going to pass the Paul Wellstone Mental Health and Addiction Equity Act. This is the Parity Act. It has 273 bipartisan co-sponsors, including myself, and this is to enact a strong mental health parity bill that will treat mental health just like we treat other health benefits. And I'm very excited about that, and I think you should be too. The state of California has gone further than the federal government in a lot of the reimbursements that they give to healthcare providers. And I think as the state is under this big crunch, they're beginning to look at cutbacks, that being one. I think it's the pound foolish issue is that if you don't take care of those issues now, you're going to be spending a lot of money to try to take care of a much more serious problem later on. We're keeping, at the federal level, we're going to keep Medicaid funding. We're fighting hard. Bush is trying to cut the Medicaid by about $12 billion over the next 5 years. And the Democratic Congress pushing back, and hopefully we'll prevail by the end of the year, and that ought to help the state of California.
Thank you, Congressman. This will be our last question for the evening, and then those who were not able to ask their question will get instructions on how to leave a voicemail for the Congressman at the tail end of the call. But let's go live now to Lawton Dodd from Monterey. Lawton, are you there?
Yes, I am. Congressman, good evening. This is Lawton Dodd. How you doing from KSBW?
Hi, Lawton. I don't think I've ever seen you not on the air, so it's nice to hear you on the radio, so to speak. I mean,
well,
hear you on this conference call.
It's I assure you, this is purely by chance. I was I'm just sitting here at home. I got home a little early tonight, and I got the call at home. And son of a gun, if it isn't your conference call, and I can't resist the opportunity to throw in a question.
Go ahead. It's great technology. Thank you.
It's great to talk to you, sir, and thank you for this opportunity. We got a heck of a presidential race going on in the Democratic Party, and there's a good opportunity or a good chance it's going to come down to superdelegates. You haven't committed so far, but you certainly have a superdelegate vote, if I'm not mistaken. Are you prepared to say who you're willing to commit to? If so, why? And if not, why not?
Well, I'll give you the why not, because I'm not ready to tell you, because I voted in the Super Tuesday election in California, but my wife doesn't even know who I voted for. One of the reasons is that I'm, as you stated, I'm as excited as you are. I've never seen this kind of excitement among electorate, a lot of the young electorate, the people that we try to get involved. Essentially rebuilding a nation. I've done a lot of traveling and thinking, and as I've been in elective office over these years, and you really realize that the strength of a democracy is dependent on the participation of its people. And if they kind of get laissez-faire about it, you get a pretty weak government. In fact, you get government that could fail, even in this country. So it takes a concerned electorate. And what usually happens in this, they always want to go out and select us folks who have titles and say, well, what do you think? You know, and I'm saying, well, what do you think? I'm going to put it back to you. And I'm excited about this. I mean, I could argue it either way. Barack Obama won Santa Cruz pretty strongly in that county, but Monterey County has more voters, and they voted for Hillary. So the district went for Hillary, the enthusiasm on the other side. And I don't want to just prejudge everybody. As a superdelegate, I'm on that ballot, too. I'm not going to do a dumb thing. And I'm going to support what my constituency wants to support. And I will see that as we get closer to the convention. If you did those elections today, I'm not sure the outcome would be exactly the same as it was in February. So I'm, after this call, I'm rushing home to watch the Texas and Ohio returns. But don't worry, these superdelegates aren't going to be doing some backroom deal. It just doesn't work that way. Most of them are elected officials, and they're going to do what they're elected folks want them to do. Some of them are party leaders, but I think in the end that's not going to make the difference on whether we go into the convention with one candidate having a majority. As you know, if they doesn't, they have a debate, they take votes, and if they don't have it on the first round, they go to a second round. And a lot of the delegates who are committed on the first round don't necessarily have to be committed on the second round. So it turns the convention into a wide open convention.
Thank you, Congressman.
So it's lots still happening.
Well, we're out of time now, Congressman Farr. Do you have any final thoughts?
Well, I just on Lawton's comment, I just want to say that, I have my daughter gave birth to a grandson on Sunday, and I think being a grandparent just makes you a futurist with a real long term perspective, much even stronger than just being a parent. It's generations to come, and I'm just very excited that this country is waking up and grasping issues, whether it be in the war in Iraq, which you know I strongly feel we ought to be out of, or whether it's alternative energies and new global warming solutions, whether it's access to education and healthcare, all of these things are all possible. And I'm very excited that America's getting involved again. And I'm, as a person who started my public service getting involved, I'm delighted that you all stayed on the line tonight. This is a remarkable technology and a remarkable way to have a big conversation. So if you didn't get to answer me a question, please stay on the line and you'll have that opportunity. We'll respond to every one of them. Thank you for participating and good luck.